You're listening to the Fantasy 411 Podcast. Now here are Mike Ciano and Corey Schwartz.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to the MLB.com Fantasy 411 Podcast, Showgram Extravaganza. Mike Ciano along with Corey Stats Schwartz. Everybody on the other side of the glass as well. But before we get to any of this wonderful content, news, and notes, and your tweets, of course, let's do a little housekeeping. Fantasy411.mlblogs.com is the place to go to get your pitcher ditch, your two-start pitchers, and whatever else Goose has up his sleeve. And in fact, he updated the latest pitcher ditch chart, Corey.
I know.
So that will be on the Fantasy homepage, I think today. And today is Thursday.
I believe it just went up, as a matter of fact.
Ooh.
I was checking, well, when people listen to this, it'll been like, it went up hours ago.
You guys are idiots.
But I checked my email this morning, and it'll definitely be up today.
All right, so there you go. So check that out. That is the updated, obviously Clayton Kershaw is still a set it and forget it.
Yeah.
But some guys seem to fluctuate between pitcher ditch, graduate, and DTM, which we will not be using on the print version, but in our world, we can use it. So check that out, and don't forget, you can follow Goose at ZachMLB. Fred Zinke still doing great work as the season progresses, and we should be having him on in the very near future, I believe, because now that he's had, I don't think he has his
in the present
real
month.
Life. Yes, in the present
month.
Well,
he's month, still got you. A life.
Well, his work life, I meant.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, sure. Take that back.
Right.
At Fred Zinke MLB, Corey is at Schwartstops, at the Cap 23, but most importantly, at Fantasy 411 is the general account on the Twitter machine. So keep checking out all that stuff. Is that it? That all I got?
Yeah, that'll do.
All right. We had a trade yesterday.
We did.
You know, one thing I knew he was, obviously everybody knows Mark Trumbo hits for power. I mean, his name says it.
The Trump bomb.
The Trump bomb. But those three, I'd forgotten how consistent he was with the, you know, with the slugging numbers for that three-year period in Anaheim. You know, 34 homers, 94 RBIs, I think was the average, yeah. Something like that.
Yep.
You know, pretty good. I know this trade sent our buddy Joe Sheehan into a little bit of a tizzy yesterday.
Right.
Because, OBP is king, as he always likes to say, and Mark Trumbo is not necessarily an OBP guy. But we have this deal. Trumbo goes in a six-player deal with former Yankee great Vladimir Nuno, and Vladimir Guerrero,
nephew,
gets traded in this. So that's a little thing there. But what did you think about this deal overall? Obviously, there's a trickle-down effect.
Well, yeah, just to Joe's point, the Mariners are 28th in on-base percentage in baseball, and Trumbo has a .299 OBP. So
not a good fit there in that category.
Look, he's clearly an offensive upgrade. The question is, how are they going to fit him in? So, you know, Austin Jackson is going to play every day in center field. He's healthy now. And you know Nelson Cruz is going to play every day, whether between right field or DH. So that leaves the two outfield corners, DH and first base, you know, three corners plus DH. Logan Morrison, Seth Smith and Dustin Ackley. Those are the guys who've been seeing most of those at bats. And presumably they will bleed away at bats to Mark Trumbo. So what's the incremental game from Logan Morrison to Mark Trumbo, you know, over the course of the season? Is that a half a win? Is that one win? You know, clearly there's an incremental gain here for the Mariners, but it's not a huge trade. From a fantasy standpoint, you know, he's going from a great hitter's park to a very good pitcher's park, but I think Trumbo can hit
pretty much anywhere. He's got anywhere power, as Mike Ciano likes to say.
Right. Corey says that sometimes, too. The D-backs, you know, this a little bit solves two problems for them. It removes a little bit of a logjam between their outfield spots and third base. Before, it was sort of a five-man rotation for four spots. Right. Pollock, Peralta, Inciarte, Tomas, and Trumbo. Trumbo goes out, but Jake Lamb is coming off rehab pretty soon. He'll play a lot at third base, maybe job share with Tomas, and then Tomas becomes a primary corner outfielder with Inciarte and Pollock, and then Peralta sort of stays in that fourth outfielder role. But you know, so that a little bit solves the problem. The other thing is the reliever they got could get some late inning work. So I don't have it on my sheet in front of me.
Yes, you're correct.
Yes, but anyway.
I was looking something up.
Right, but, Ziegler got the save again yesterday. Addison Reed's been pitching better in a setup role, but this does give them a little bit of bullpen depth as well. The thing that was funny to me about it was that the Mariners picked up Wellington Castillo from the Cubs,
right?
You know, basically off the scrap heap. And then they flip him in this deal, and now he's going to play a lot at catcher for the D-backs along with Jared Saltalamacchia because Tuffy Goswitch is out for the season. So Castillo has a nice little bump in value in NL-only leagues. I don't think this makes him a mixed leaguer, But in a lowly leagues, a catcher with some pop, yeah, sure, why not?
Dominic Leone.
I apologize to Dominic and his mom and dad. he's got a pretty good arm. He could see some late inning work for the D-backs.
Guerrero was ranked number 5 on the MLB.com top 30 prospect list for the Mariners, not the top 30 overall. You say presumably bad news for a Morrison, a Seth Smith, or an Ackley. How about the fact that against righties, Morrison bats leadoff?
Yeah.
So it's not like Trumbo's going to move into the leadoff spot.
Yeah.
So if Trumbo moves in and it's at the expense of Morrison at bats against righties, somebody else has to bat leadoff.
Right.
Austin Jackson bats leadoff against lefties.
Right. I mean, clearly, you know,
they got to figure some things
out.
They
didn't acquire Trumbo to be a part-time player. So now these three players, Morrison, Smith, and Ackley, are all going to feel the squeeze for at-bats as a result.
Yep, there you go. Morrison, 11-game hitting streak.
Very nice.
Didn't know that. On the other side of that Mariners game, or that series, I should say, this week, was the return of Tanaka for the New York Yankees. He went out and he was fantastic. I think maybe the 6th or 7th inning, whatever his last strikeout was, whenever that was, he hit 95.
Yeah, his last pitch of the day to strike out Kyle Seager to end the 7th inning, 95.7 miles an hour per pitch FX.
Oh, 95.7. I stand corrected.
Right, because you would round that to 96, Mike. That was his fastest pitch of the year.
Mm.
So it's amazing. He pitched a rehab game 5 days ago, lasted 3 innings. By the 3rd inning, he was throwing 86, and everybody was all in a tizzy about what to do with Tanaka. He comes out and basically throws his best start of the year. That's not saying a lot because there have only been 5. But this was a great start by anybody's measure. And the thing that impressed me, not only that he maintained velocity, but the velocity crept up as the game went along. It's almost like he felt, I'm, getting the juices flowing. Through all of his pitches, was very, very sharp. He got into one jam in the 3rd inning, got out of it with some bad base running by the Mariners, and then basically rolled the rest of the way. So we've talked about this before. If you have Tanaka on your roster, it's sort of like when you had Ricky Henderson. You have to have him in there as long as he's healthy, no matter who he's pitching against or where he's pitching, and just ride this out as long as it lasts. I have no idea how many starts he'll be able to make, but you want them all.
And did you have him active in all your leagues?
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Absolutely.
Well, because, I mean, there was some discussion of, all right, he's going to go Tuesday. Well, then he got roughed up. We don't know. And then, so I could see in a weekly league, maybe you don't take that chance because you're like, I'm not going to get anything.
I went back and forth on it. I have him in one. The only weekly transaction league I have him in, as a matter of fact, is Tout Wars.
Right.
But what it came down to for me is, am I going to miss a possible start of Tanaka, even if he's only throwing 80 pitches? And by the way, he only needed 76 pitches to go 7 innings. Or my number 7, number 8 starter, who is Rick Porcello, you never know what you're going to get. Even though he pitched well yesterday, you'd rather have Tanaka out there, or Mike Bolsinger, who didn't pitch well. So you have to have him out there. One other note about that Yankees game, Brian McCann left the game early with more soreness in that foot, and he's going for an MRI. So that's all I know about it as of right now.
Yep.
But keep an eye on that. That's a potentially damaging situation.
Definitely. Speaking of injuries, we all know Adrian Beltre is going to miss at least 2 to 3 weeks with a dislocated thumb. But with I don't want to say death because Adrian Beltre is...
One door closes, another one opens. How about that?
The rise of the phoenix. The rise of the legend from the ashes of Adrian Beltre's dislocated thumb comes Joey Gallo, who goes out and has one of the best debuts you'll ever see. And then after going 0 for 3 with 3 strikeouts and staring at a golden sombrero, homers in his last at-bat on Wednesday. So the legend of Joey Gallo is here. Now the question is... The biggest thing when a guy gets called up, and this happened with somebody else too, maybe McCullers, right? So I thought there was a couple guys that got called up. And you're like, oh, I don't know if they're going to stay up when the guy comes back.
Yeah.
And in this case, the guy is Adrian Beltre. But you know what? Sometimes these things, as we always say, have a way of working themselves out, or something will get figured out. But, you know, listen, he's not going to homer every game.
Maybe.
He is Joey Gallo. But... you know, they'll have an interesting situation. But the good news is there's a couple of weeks to go if Beltre's even ready to go. You know, the thumb is not always the best thing to have hurt when you're a baseball player. But what do you think about Gallo?
I mean, obviously,
you're excited about him.
Yeah,
but.
And this is only half the story. You know, Beltre going on the DL, when this initially happened, the response was Gallo's only going to be up as long as Beltre gets hurt. Then two things happen that are very interesting. Number one, Gallo goes out and homers every single game, at least after two. And then Josh Hamilton goes on the DL with a hamstring strain. They think he could be out for a month. So that potentially opens up more at-bats. On the other hand, the guy, when Beltre got hurt, my immediate thought was, oh, they're going to bring back Rougned Odor and move, you know, the Rosales and Field, whatever, you know, collection over to third base. They said they wanted Odor to stay down and keep working on his defense, but listen to what he's done with the bat. In 21 games since getting sent to AAA, he's hitting .338 with a .430 on-base percentage and a .703 slugging percentage. 21 games, 10 doubles, 5 homers, 11 walks, and 7 strikeouts. Yesterday, Wednesday, he went 3-for-3 with 2 doubles and 2 walks. So I'm looking at this as like, all right, never mind what's going on here. This guy's ready to come back and play second base again, regardless of who's playing second or third.
Right.
Hamilton's injury presumably leaves the door open for Gallo to stay up, but he's got to keep hitting.
Right.
They've still got Mitch Moreland, who can play outfield. They've got DeShields, Martin, and Chu as their sort of main three-man outfield now. DeShields has earned plenty of playing time. So this comes down to Gallo has to hit. If he hits, they'll find a way. If he doesn't hit, they won't. The interesting thing about the two homers that he was set in the minor leagues to be the one guy with 80 power. Mm-hmm. Like, he is the true king when it comes to power in the minor leagues. 80 is the top of the scale.
Right.
There's nowhere to go
right.
on the 2080 scouting scale. But he's kind of a Chris Carter type, and we'll get to Carter. You know, he's going to hit a lot of homers, but can this guy make contact? So far in the major leagues, every out he's made has been by strikeout. He's got a 1,000 BABIP, BABIP if you prefer. So, you know, look, two games, three of those strikeouts yesterday were against Chris Sale. He's going to do that to a lot of hitters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gallo is going to give you a ton of power and might hit 200 or 220 or 230. We don't know, but he's got the opportunity to win a job if he can maintain the power and reasonable production. And I still think now that Odor is just hitting the point where they're just going to have to say, look, I don't care if this guy's an ordinary defensive player. This is a bat that needs to be ready for the major leagues. We've talked about this many times over the years. If a guy can help you, make a spot for him.
Yeah, and, you know, and Gallo started. Now, listen, Jeff Banas's hands may have been tied anyway. He has to replace Adrian Beltre. You have Joey Gallo. You're going to call him up one day and sit him the next because it's a left-hander. And, yes, that left-hander is Chris Sale. I get all that. But he also homered off a left-hander. So,
right.
You know. No, I think he struck out all Duke. Three times it was against Sale.
Dukes. Yeah, three strikeouts off Sale, then homered off Duke.
So, right. All you know, a lot of lefty-on-lefty stuff going, lefty-on-lefty crime
going on there. You know, look, if you want to look at it this way, Beltre and Hamilton can be replaced by Gallo and Odor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's room for everybody. You know, it's interesting to me the contrast between bringing up a bat-first guy like Gallo, who's not known for his defense, and jumping him from Double-A and saying it's only for 2 to 3 weeks, whereas Odor, who they thought enough of to bring him up as a 20-year-old last year, and now back in AAA, he's destroying it. Well, we want him to work on his glove. You know, it's a little bit of an odd contrast to me. You know, remember that there was a big prospect who didn't break camp in the major leagues earlier this year. They said they wanted him to work on his glove.
Yeah.
And his bat has turned out to be a pretty good glove.
And, you know, Gallo, Harper, and Bryan, I'm sure you've heard it all, read it all, seen it all by now, all played on the same team in Vegas. Gallo is the youngest of the three. Think about that for a second. We always think, oh, my God, Bryce Harper's so young, Chris Bryan's so young. Gallo's, now, I don't know, it might be a couple weeks youngest, but whatever. But he's the youngest of the three, so could you imagine playing that team?
That team better have never
could
lost.
Could you imagine pitching against that team? I want to point something out real quick because I thought it was really interesting as we're talking about these young superstars. This year is the 10-year anniversary of the 2005 draft.
Mm-hmm.
That was the draft that Justin Upton, my boy, went number one overall. Tua went in that draft. Ryan Braun went in that draft. Andrew McCutcheon went in that draft. Ryan Zimmerman went in that draft.
Ricky Romero went in that draft.
Ricky Romero went in that draft. Mike Pelfrey went in
Didn't
that
Longoria
draft.
Go in that draft too?
No.
Because Longoria and Tulo both came out of Long Beach State, right?
Yeah, but Longo wasn't in that draft.
Oh, okay. Maybe a year later. Anyway.
Jeff Clement went in that draft.
There you go.
That was the big read. We do an oral history and a really great video today on the site for our Throwback Thursday segment. It's everywhere. You'll be hard-pressed not to find it. Cameron Maben. There was 10, 11, 12 was three high school hitters. It was Maben, McCutcheon, and somebody else very good that I'm forgetting.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a wild draft, and it's probably Jay Bruce.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So and like we talked to Duquette, who was the Mets, you know, was involved heavily with the Mets at that time. I think he actually was the GM at the time. Dan O'Dowd was the general manager of the Rockies at the time. We talked to him, Callis, Mayo. And but a lot of oral history from the guys that got drafted. And Cameron Maben was telling a story about how when he would have fourth period off, he would go out, set up the field with the bases and stuff like that, and work out for the scouts. And you say, well, why not just wait till the game? The scouts were worried they wouldn't pitch to Maben. So they wouldn't get to see him hit.
Yeah.
Because he was so awesome in high school that they pitched around him.
Yeah.
So he would have to work out in like the middle of his school day and then go back to class in the fifth period.
That's awesome.
Pretty wild stuff. Definitely give it a read today and
you know,
watch.
We flagged this a couple of weeks ago since you mentioned Cameron Maben. He's playing almost every single day now and really starting to hit. Three hits yesterday, two runs, two RBIs, hitting near the top of the lineup. So he should be gone in every league right now, but you might want to double check that. And since you mentioned it, this is our last podcast before the 2015 first-year player draft. Mm-hmm. By the time you and I reconvene, there will be players drafted.
There will be.
So we'll consult with Mayo and Callis and the Brain Trust and see who the first guys are that might make a fantasy impact.
Yeah, maybe we, Mr. Lundberg, maybe make a note to get a Jonathan Mayo, the godfather of the Fantasy 411, on the show next week.
Yeah, that would work.
That'd be terrific. So, all right, let's talk a little bit about injuries. And we don't have the Ryan Braun thumb thing on this? Oh, we talked about Beltran,
He went for another cryo
treatment
on his thumb.
Let's talk exclusively about injuries.
No, it's not exclusively, but a lot of people got injured.
All right, well, what's the latest on Braun? Because that makes
sense. He went for cryo treatment, a new cryo treatment on his thumb.
Are they going to freeze his thumb?
Yeah, like Ted Williams' head.
It falls off, they put it back on?
They're calling this like a preemptive thing, you know, to sort of maintain the treatment he had over the offseason. I'll be honest with you, I was terrified of Ryan Braun this year. He is not on any of my fantasy teams. And this is exactly why. I'm not saying that this is a problem.
Terrifying. So
but it was the yes, honestly, because
you, like under the covers shaking.
I was petrified, mortified.
Checking under your bed if Brian Braun was there.
I had him in a couple of teams. I had him in a couple of teams last year. He came out a little slow, went berserk in later April. Remember that three homer game in Philadelphia? I was like, awesome. And then all of a sudden the thumb started hurting him and he was never right again. And that's what I was afraid of having happen this year. That he would come out of the gate hot, and everybody would be happy, and then it would start, the problems would start creeping in. And that's my fear right now. Everybody's saying, blah, 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 no big deal. It's just a planned maintenance treatment, yada, yada, yada. Scares the heck out of me.
Yeah.
So I am very shy away from Ryan Braun right now in every league.
I have Braun and Soler on an NL-only team, so I'm not having a good 24 hours.
No,
in
you
that
don't.
Sense. So Soler on the DL with a sprained ankle. He was doing okay. I mean, he's not bad. I mean, it's not like he's hitting 220, but, you know, you'd like to see a little bit more power, just four homers, 19 RBIs.
Yeah, he was a disappointment. I mean, you know, he was getting taken apart by the breaking stuff like a lot of young hitters do, striking out a lot. The interesting thing about this one, look, you know, this means more playing time for guys like Junior Lake. That's not very exciting from a fantasy standpoint.
It was exciting last night, though, from a show-off standpoint. Did you see that?
Yeah.
When he's telling the shush?
He shushed.
I mean, it's like, you know,
if I ever...
It reminds me of the guy that does a touchdown dance when you're down 28-0 in the fourth quarter.
You know what Barry Sanders said? Act like you've been there before.
I think that was Emmitt Smith.
No, it was Barry Sanders.
You sure?
Yeah, he'd score a touchdown and flip the ball to the ref, you know, the back judge, and they'd say, why do you do that? He said, I want to act like I've been there before.
I thought that was always Emmitt Smith.
But I'll tell you this, though.
I'm going to check the internet.
Now that I play slow-pitch co-eds, well, actually not co-ed. Now that I play slow-pitch softball again, I'm out of retirement. If I ever throw a guy out from the outfield, like if I throw a guy out trying to score from
second... You'll do the
worm? No. I'm gonna hold up my finger pistol, blow the smoke off, give it a little spin like in RoboCop, and holster it.
Yeah.
And maybe on top of it, I'll give him a little dikembe like this, Mikey.
Oh my God.
No. I'm gonna wag the finger at him. When am I ever gonna do that? Anyhow, never mind Junior Lake. Here's the story. Javier Baez is back now with the AAA Iowa Cubs. Played third base the other day. We also saw Chris Bryant play left field for the Cubs the other day. And I said to myself, and I'm not the first person to say this to myself, I wonder eventually if the solution is Baez comes up to play third base, Bryant moves to the outfield to replace Chris Coughlin, who's not hitting much in left field. Maybe now it becomes Bryant moves to the outfield, Coughlin moves over to the other spot to cover while Soler is out. Baez is hitting the ball in AAA.
Yeah.
Big time prospect. So, you know, everybody seems to be downplaying this right now in Cubby land, you know, on the north side. It's just something interesting to keep an eye on.
Oh, this is interesting. You know who had the, in its original form, you know who started that quote?
What?
Vince Lombardi.
Really?
Yeah, I did not know that. Wow. In its original form, this was a Vince Lombardi quote. When you get into the end zone, act like you've been there before.
Okay.
Huh.
It's sort of like
Lombard just texted me, Vince Lombardi.
And it's sort of like everybody learns bunting in the first inning from, you know, John McGraw. Trickles down.
Anyway, okay. I didn't know that. I always thought it was MS. Well, you know.
It might have been MS.
You know what it is? They all say it. That's why we're it because of Lombardi.
But you know who says it? The great ones.
That's true. That's true. The great ones do say it. Okay.
Not the guys who score a touchdown and then pull out a cell phone from under the pad.
I was at that game.
So was I.
Oh, that's right.
Winter meetings in New Orleans, right.
That's right.
Joe Horn. Yep. Anyway.
All right. Where were we?
Football.
Yasiel Puig. Restart rehab, which is funny. Thursday in Rancho Cucamonga. Could return next week while Hector Olivera will join Double A Tulsa. It's pretty awesome how they have it set up now, the Dodgers. Double A is in Tulsa and Triple A is in Oklahoma City.
Right.
So, like, if you live in that area, which I know people who do, you could just kind of bounce back and forth if guys get called up.
Yeah.
It's not a bad trip between the two.
It's nice.
So, yeah, a buddy of mine is getting to see, like, some real stuff down there on the minor league level. And he's not a Dodgers fan, but you get to see Seager and, you know, Olivera and, you know, when Peterson was there, stuff mm-hmm. like that. Well, no, Peterson never played over there.
All right, let's just jump ahead a year.
Okay.
For keeper leagues or just for fun.
Adrian
Gonzalez is what, 33, 34 years old? Something like that?
Sounds about right.
Hector Olivera, I believe, is 30. He'll be your second baseman. Corey Seager is 21, 22. He'll be your shortstop. Alex Guerrero is how old? 24, 25, 26. He'll be your third baseman. Jacques Peterson, your center fielder, is 22.
Yes.
Your right fielder, Yasiel Puig, awesome. Is what, 24, 25? I don't know who's going to be in left field, I guess, I don't know. And your catcher, Grandal, is 26. Your number one starter, Kershaw, is 27. Your number two starter, Greinke, is 29 or 30. Your closer, Kenley Jansen,
well, you may not have a Greinke.
27 or 20. But you see where I'm going with this? This is a team built to win. Anyway, Puig has been working out in Arizona, running at 100%. They think this could be a much shorter rehab than last time. Apparently, he feels much better. Rancho Cucamonga is actually on a six-day road trip. Mm. Mattingly said he could be back after the first three-game series, maybe the second three-game series. But it looks like he'll be back quickly. He's going right into the lineup this time, no DHing. Hector Olivera will go to Double A Tulsa. They don't think he'll need long in the minors, although I don't know where he's going to play when he's going to come back. Carl Crawford moved to the 60-day DL, no timeline on him. Andre Ethier, basically, by rate stats, is having the best season of his career. Yeah. So when Puig comes back next week, Ethier will take over as your primary left fielder, and then you're going to have Guerrero and Turner squished between backup left fielder and third baseman now. Scott Van Slyke's on the DL. He's out of the picture for a little while. So you've got sort of this ripple effect when everybody's ready next week. You know, when Puig comes back, we know what everybody's rule will be. Probably Turner's the guy who will get squeezed the most. Guerrero, I think, will see more playing time at third than he has been. But you've got Seager pushing now in AAA. We've got Olivera in AA. Maybe, how long till he's ready to go. This offense is loaded. You know, it's almost a problem of where is everybody going to play. You know Puig is going to play. You know Jacques Peterson is going to play. You know Gonzalez is going to play. I still think Jimmy Rollins is a great risk here if he doesn't start hitting because Turner can play a little bit of short and Seager eventually will be their shortstop. So Rollins is the guy you got to be worried about. You got to be worried about Crawford. You got to be worried about Guerrero and Turner sharing at bats. I mean, these are nice problems to have, but, man, this offense is loaded. One last Dodger note.
Yeah.
Kenley Jansen went 8 days without pitching, then got a save on Tuesday night, was supposed to be available again Wednesday. Dodgers take an 8-6 lead into the ninth. He doesn't pitch. After the game, all anybody will say is he was unavailable. No mention if he was injured, if there was a death in the family. I'm not making light. I mean, no one is saying why he was unable to pitch. They just said he was unavailable. Kenley refused to talk to reporters. Don Mattingly, all he would say is, he was unavailable, he was unavailable, he was unavailable. Apparently he was not pleased in his tone, but I wasn't there.
You were not.
We'll have to see. This is going to play out. But Kenley Jansen, curiously, unavailable to pitch Wednesday night in Colorado.
Adrian Gonzalez, 33. Mm-hmm. What'd you say? You had him a little older.
I said 34, which next year is what he'll be.
Yeah, there you go. You got that.
I'm not going to get a sore shoulder patting myself on the back.
And Olivera's 30, as you said.
Seager's 21, so he'll be 22.
Yep.
How old's Guerrero? 24, 25, 26.
Where is Guerrero? Where is he? Oh, there he is. He was born in 86.
So he'll be 86. He'll be 29 next year. He'll be 30 next year.
He'll be 30.
Older than I thought.
Yeah, well, he's November, so he...
All right, he'll be in his age 29 season.
Yeah, so there you go. All right, let's go to Did You Know?
Okay.
As said by the, and I'm sure you'll be very happy to share this with everybody because you were very high on this player. There is no player in MLB who has equal or better numbers in all 5x5 categories than reveal.
A.J. Pollock. Homer yesterday, now hitting .318 with 7 homers, 23 RBIs, 6th in the majors with 13 steals, 7th with 37 runs. Now, look, I'm not saying A.J. Pollock is the best fantasy player in the land. Obviously, that's Paul Goldschmidt right now, who's matching or exceeding Mike Trout in all 5x5 categories. But my point is that Pollock is a guy who I think flew under the radar on draft day and is giving you enormous across-the-board value. I was having this conversation with Fred Zinke yesterday. He's offered me a lot of trades for Pollock. Yesterday, he offered me Christian Yelich straight up. He said, this might be your only chance to trade a $9 player, which is what Pollock cost, for a $26 player, which is what Yelich cost. I said, well, to be fair, I'm the guy that bid up Yelich, but I thought Pollock was worth a lot more than $9, which is why I bought him. I figured he'd hit .285, 12 to 15 homers, 25 steals, and score a lot of runs batting at the top of that D-backs lineup. Now, he's ahead of the pace I expected for him, but if you look at what he did in partial seasons in 13 and 14, this is not a fluke. Maybe he's going to drift back, and maybe he's playing at his 100th percentile level instead of 90 or 80%, but this is a really, really good ball player. So to get back to what we talked about at the very top, the trade of Mark Trumbo and the return of Jake Lamb is not going to directly put pressure on playing on Pollock for his playing time. Indirectly, there's 5 guys for 4 spots, so eventually he'll have to sit once in a while. But this is a guy who really is going to be playing almost every day and is a really underrated 5-category contributor. I mean, said contributor. That's how they say it in Canada.
Chris Carter, who
has... You've got to begin each one with, did you know?
Did you know
okay.
that this player who had a... Yeah, I already said his name, though.
Okay.
799 OPS last year, and since starting the season 3 for 42, now has an 856 OPS, 10 homers, 29 RBIs, 23 walks. Homering twice on Wednesday to extend this hitting streak to 11 games. One of them was an absolute moonshot off the choo-choo train.
Hell yeah.
Reveal.
So Chris Carter, and the reason I mention this, he had a 799 OPS last year in which he hit 37 homers and was unconscious in the second half. You throw out that terrible, terrible start. And look, those stats count, but we're looking at current performance and going forward. Mm-hmm. Since breaking out of that 3-for-42 slump, he's been better than he was last year. 10 homers, 29 RBIs, and 23 walks in 40 games. Those are huge numbers. If you look at his overall numbers, the strikeouts are up from last year. The fly ball rate is down. The home run to fly ball rate is down. But all of those numbers have been trending up since April. April gave way to a good May. Very, very small sample size in June. They're up again. And his walk rate last year to this year overall is up almost 40%. This is not a guy who's going to hit 300, okay? His BABIP is right where it was last year. But as more of those home runs go over the fence, those count as hits too, Mike.
They do.
And that's going to lift the batting average. In OBP leagues, like Tout Wars, where I spent very heavily to get Chris Carter, this guy is gold. Gold, Jerry.
Gold.
He's very undervalued because of that low batting average, but all of those power indicators are trending in the right direction. I still think he's going to make a run at 35 to 40 homers, and I'm still a buyer if he's available.
You want to hear a funny Chris Carter story?
Yes, I do.
So he was in here one day.
Right in the seat you're sitting in?
No, just in the building.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Helping us out with some stuff. And the Houston contingent, the broadcast contingent, came with him, for a tour and all that stuff. So we go to have, we took everybody out to lunch at Hill Country Barbecue, which is fantastic. Mm. Chris came with us and he had... he's having some ribs, whatever. You'd think a big guy, he'd eat like a month, but no. I mean, these guys watch what they eat. He's not an offensive lineman.
He didn't order the full rack.
No, he's not an offensive lineman. So he's eating. We're all like the whole day, like, oh my God, I'm so stuffed or whatever. So they play the Yankees that night. So I'm watching the game and he's 0 for 3 with 3 strikeouts and he's looking sluggish.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah.
He's in pork coma.
Pretty much. I'm like, I'm feeling sluggish too, Chris. I feel your pain right now. I'm saying to the TV.
Yeah.
And then he hits like a go-ahead homer in the 9th inning.
Yep.
I was like, I know where he was in between innings. he looked terrible. His first 3, I don't even know who he was facing. And obviously, I'm sure it had a lot to do with the pitcher and almost nothing, and probably nothing at all to do with the food.
It had everything to do with you, Mike. Just keep believing that.
It was just a funny story because I was texting with Arturo, who runs our social media account at MLB, and I'm texting him like, yeah, like laughing, like, oh, yeah. My God, I'd look like that, too, if I ate, you know, barbecue for lunch, you know, 4 hours before a game, whatever it was. And then we're like, yeah, but watch, he's gonna do something here and screw us for taking him out to whatever. And then lo and behold, gets up and does it and looks like a completely different guy.
You know,
it's a good little Chris Carter story.
But you just made a good point there, and you said looked like a completely different guy. He mm-hmm. is a completely different hitter from mm-hmm. the beginning of last year. He's changed the mechanics of his mm-hmm. swing considerably. We've talked about that a lot. It's interesting. We rolled out the new player pages on MLB.com, mm-hmm. And they look fantastic.
They do. They look fantastic.
Beautiful, big,
fabulous,
big action pictures, you know, yep. big color action pictures. And I noticed, and I'm not saying this as a criticism, just an observation, in the picture of Carter, he's released his top hand off the bat. Now, I wonder if that's just a ground ball that he mm-hmm. kind of lunged out at. But one of the big changes he made over his swing is to keep that top hand on the bat now and really shorten up his swing. Because he's 6'5", 240. He doesn't need to take a big, long swing
right.
to generate power. And if you saw those two home runs he hit on Wednesday night, just tight swing. The first one was a fastball in off the plate, and he got around off it and hit it into the Crawford boxes. And then the second one was a little more out over the plate, and as you said, he hit the train with it.
Unbelievable.
Absolute bomb. But short, quick, compact swing. Top hand stays on the bat. It's almost like a tomahawk chop kind of thing. That's not going to lead to a very high average because he just has, look, he's a big guy, big strike zone. He's got a lot of swing and miss, but he can still generate tremendous power and drive the ball the other way with that swing. And a lot of his home runs go to the opposite field too. Mm-hmm. So, I'm a big believer in his power because of some of the mechanical changes he made to his swing last year.
You know, and I don't know too much about Dave Hudgens or Alan Zinter. And mm-hmm. who are they, you ask? Well, they're the hitting coach and the assistant yep. hitting coach for the Astros.
Yep.
But who knows?
Hudgens was the hitting coach for the Mets for a little while, I believe.
Yeah.
But, I know that they consulted with some data providers to mm-hmm. get some mechanical data on
team,
his swing.
Yeah. Big data team.
Not going to talk too much about that. But, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't just the typical stand closer to the plate, stand further than the plate, and he is standing closer to the plate now. Someone told me this story that when Hudgens started working with him, I think this even goes back to 2013, they observed that he was swinging and miss a lot, getting beat on a lot of outside fastballs. What they had him do, you know, before the game while they were working on it, they said, we want you to stand in your regular stance, stop your swing halfway, and then lay your bat down on the ground. So he did it. He laid his bat down on the ground. And the top end of the bat was still like 4 inches away from the outer edge of home plate.
Right.
He said, move a little closer to the plate. So that's another thing you're seeing right now, why he's able to get so much opposite field power, because he can cover that outer corner now. But as we saw at least one data point on that first home run last night, because of that short, quick swing, he can get around on the inside stuff. And he's strong enough that even if he gets jammed, he's still going to jam it over the fence.
Yep.
He's 6'5", 240, Mike.
He's a big guy.
He's strong enough.
He's a big dude.
So, look, he's not going to be a 300 hitter, but in on-base leagues, this guy is gold, Jerry.
And he paid his dues, man. I mean, you know, we were saying for
he
years, you know,
barbecue.
Free Chris Carter, free Chris Carter. And he was just getting bounced around. And then he gets to Houston. You're like, well, they have Singleton, or they then traded for Singleton, something like that. And you're like, well, what's going on here? And you know, they had Brett Wallace.
Singleton's putting up huge numbers in AAA.
Yeah.
But with Carter and Gattis both hitting now, he's kind of stuck.
And Gattis is hitting the home runs, too.
All right. Speaking of the Astros.
You want to do this one?
Say it.
Did you know? I'll do it. Right. Did you know that this person, since recording his first extra base hit, I don't know why you wrote his in all caps.
I'll explain it later.
Fifth MLB, first extra base hit in his fifth MLB game on May 14th, this person ranks eighth in MLB in fewest plate appearances per extra base hit.
And that player is Preston Tucker, also the Astros. Not a highly touted prospect. Honestly, Din Mann, our boss, you know, the Capo de Capo, said to me, this guy can hit. Check him out. And I went and looked at his minor league stats.
Mm-hmm.
High average, high power, a lot of walks, big-time lefty hitter. And he's starting to steal a lot of at-bats in left field and pushing Jake Marisnyk and Colby Rasmus into a little competition. He's even batted as high as third in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't have anything too insightful to say here other than the fact that if you haven't heard of this guy, go check him out. This guy can hit.
Take a look.
He's starting to play. The reason I put his in all caps is because I also had a similar note about Addison Russell, but Russell was only 13th since his first extra base hit, so mm-hmm. I thought the Tucker note, and everybody knows about Addison Russell.
Right, we do.
The Tucker note to me was a little bit more telling. Now, it hasn't been a lot of homers. It's 8 doubles and 2 homers and 66 plate appearances.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a home run hitter in the minors. He's playing in a home run hitter's ballpark. Definitely a guy you want to take a look at in deeper mixed leagues and AL only. He's a little under the radar, but should not be because of that power.
Did you know, fantasy fans, that this guy trails only Anthony Rizzo among lefty hitters in OPS versus lefty pitchers? Reveal.
I'll tell you what, being able to hit lefties is critical for lefty hitters.
Get out of here.
It's Brandon Crawford.
It is.
So far in 44 plate appearances this year against lefties, he's hitting .436 with a .500 on base percentage and a .718 slugging percentage. I think we talked about this last time or the week before.
Did.
Kids, Brandon Crawford's legit. He hit lefties last year, you know, not as well as he did this year. If you look at his year by year throughout the minors and throughout the majors, he's gotten better and better and better against lefties. He's moving up in the order with Posey and Bell and Hunter Pence now. This Giants is not a pick-on, pitch-or-ditch offense anymore. This is a legit offense. Brandon Crawford is a top 10 offensive shortstop right now, and I will kick myself all year long because I drafted him as a reserve in Tout Wars because I knew this thing that he could hit lefties, and I thought, wow, this might turn into something. I cut him early in the season for reasons I cannot explain. Scott Pianowski can thank me anytime he wants. Crawford is legit. Don't look at this as being a fluke. Well, you know, he's a 247 hitter, blah, blah, blah. When a lefty hitter can hit lefty pitching, that is a very big deal.
And we just, we were just talking about that. Now, last week we brought it up with, because I was telling a story. I think you brought up something about Crawford anyway. I was telling you the story that when Segura got hurt in my 16-team mixed, when Segura got hurt, I put in for Zach Cozart and Brandon Crawford with the idea that, yeah, I think Cozart might be a little bit better player, but if I get Crawford, I'll live.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. And now Segura sits on my bench. But again, you cut him in tout, and he was available in middle of May in a 16-team mix.
Right.
So you can't beat yourself up too much.
No, it's sort of like, you know, don't confuse the outcome with the decision. Mm-hmm. I made a really good decision in reserving him, and I made a really bad decision, you know, in cutting him. So it was a good decision with a bad outcome because I decided to cut him and blew it up. I should have hung on.
All right, some weird stuff, some weird baseball the other day.
Weird and wild.
Tuesday and Wednesday with some pitching out in San Diego as they hosted the Mets. Cashner on Tuesday and Thor on Wednesday became the first and second pitchers since 1914. Oh, I didn't do the did you know.
No, it's okay. So
with at least 10-plus hits allowed, 10-plus Ks, and fewer than five innings.
Yeah, so the reason we say since 1914
that is
that's
the definition of feast or famine.
That's as far back as anybody was able to check the data. Cashner, I remember seeing this note popping up.
Yeah.
First pitcher ever, first pitcher in 100 years, with to allow 10 or more hits, 10-plus strikeouts, and fewer than five innings. He got one out on a batted ball. The first batter he faced.
Unbelievable.
Every other batter he faced after that either reached base safely or struck out. That's insane. First pitcher in 100 years. So what happens? You can't predict baseball?
Nope.
The next night, another guy does it.
And
in
the same
stadium,
ballpark. Same series.
Noah Syndergaard. His stuff, I mean, look, there's nothing too elegant to say here. Both of these guys have phenomenal stuff, and that's what you need to be concerned about. Cashner is a humongous buy-low opportunity right now.
I mean, everybody just keeps bringing up his win-loss record.
Right.
It's a joke.
The fact that
just cover it up. Don't
the
worry
fact
about
that
it.
He's 2-7, I think,
yeah.
has absolutely no
Nothing.
Bearing whatsoever
Nothing.
On what this pitcher might do going forward.
Yep,
this guy
awesome.
Is a buy. He's got a 5-1 strikeout to walk rate, strikeout per inning. Look, we know the Padres' outfield defense is bad, but that's the whole point. He can strike out a ton of people.
Yep.
That's going to make up for that. Syndergaard, totally living up to the hype. Dylan Gee comes off the DL to start today, Thursday. They're going to go six-man rotation, but we'll wait and see. These things have a way of solving themselves.
It's not going to work.
You know, DeGrom was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Cologne is getting the job done. I think, basically, in my mind, this is Nice versus Gee to keep the rotation spot.
That absolutely makes sense. And you know, just to show you why, I may not even check my league this week in the NL only I'm in. Four guys we mentioned today are all on it, and it's all been bad news. I have Cashner and Syndergaard. It's not good in a head-to-head league with the scoring. Yeah, the strikeouts help, but everything else just totally blew them up. And then I told you that.
Well, I have Ruby De La Rosa in a lot of leagues.
Mm.
So he had eight strikeouts yesterday in five innings against the Braves.
Yeah.
Awesome. Gave up seven runs,
including
a pair of bombs to Freddie Freeman.
Yep, and I also have Soler and Braun. So now one guy I have that's doing fantastic, did you know, he's on my bench.
Oh.
Because
what are you
the guy
doing?
To the left of me was like, no, it's all right. It's again, don't confuse the outcome with the decision. I have Kenley Jansen and Jerry Familia, Jerry Family. So he's on my bench. But did you know, since getting blown up for 3 runs twice in his first 7 outings, this guy is 14 for 14 in save ops, 0.47 ERA, 0.83 whip, 9-2 strikeout to walk.
Mark Melancon.
Yep.
Everybody was ready to look. I had him in a couple leagues. Everybody went out and picked up Tony Watson, who's pitched great. Melancon has gotten it together. The velocity has gradually crept up. It's not all the way back to where it was last year. You know, last year he would throw 93. Right now he's around 90 or 91, better than where he was early in the season, but not all the way back. But he's commanding. That is the key thing for Mark Melancon. 2 walks in his last 19 and a third innings. The strikeouts haven't come back yet because the velocity is not back yet, but he's commanding, and that's the key. He has tons and tons of job security right now, and it just goes to show, you know, you have to be careful about small sample sizes. You have to be careful about knee-jerk reactions. Through the first, look, I remember that second outing was against the Cubs. He gave up 3 runs. Everybody was like, are they going to pull him from the closer role? They're going to pull, and Clint Hurdle, rightly or wrongly, said, this is our guy. We think he's going to get better. We've seen it before. And he has. So I think you can come off the plank about Melancon. You don't have to jump in.
Yeah, it's just very, very, very much so. In a daily league, I think it's easy. You know, you can move things around anyway. But in a weekly league, 2 weeks ago, it was Melancon had 7 games and Familia had 6. And Familia was coming off a weird week in which the Mets weren't playing very well, so he didn't really do anything. But the strikeouts, which hurt Melancon. It does hurt him. I mean, even though he's 9 for 2, it's 9 strikeouts and 19 and a third. That's not very good.
No, definitely not elite closer, but as a second-tier closer, real solid right now.
So I left Melancon on the bench. Familia ended up going out and having a sick week. But now the roles have reversed this week, and that's just what happens. What are you going to do?
Yep.
Speaking of closers, this one, since getting blown up for 4 runs twice in his first 5 outings.
Even worse.
Did you know, is now 9 for 9 in save ops with a 2.33 and a 1.03 whip, 26-7 strikeout to walk in 19 and a third.
And that's Cody Allen. You know, Francona said he would be patient with Allen.
Yeah, he was.
And he has been. And, you know, again, a 2.33 ERA and a 1.03 whip are not elite closer numbers, really. But they're second-tier closer numbers. Because 26 strikeouts in 19 and a third. So he and Melancon are kind of mirror images. Melanson's a command guy. Cody Allen is fastball, curveball, see if he can hit it. So both of these guys now have rebounded from slow starts, ton of job security. You know, if you had them both and you hung on, good job by you. If you sold low, well, hopefully you got a good return.
All right, let's go to some tweets that were sent in at Fantasy411 and wrangled up by the Goose. At Drew Henson starts us off.
It's good to know that post-football he's playing fantasy baseball.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. Have to drop either Ben Revere or Rosny Castillo. Which should it be?
I think you got to drop Revere. With Mikhail Franco up now and Cody Ash playing left field, Ben Revere is in a job share. You know,
Mikhail Franco's hitting homers, baby.
Yep, hit one off Aroldis yesterday. Yeah, he can turn around for heat. I think you got to drop Revere. You know, he's basically, you know, he's trade bait right now. He's a one category player as it is, or maybe a 2.5 category player. Castillo's going to play a lot more. He's a little bit banged up from time to time, but his upside outweighs what we know right now about Ben Revere.
Got off. This is from
Ichiban
76. Got offered Tanaka for Waka.
Joe Sheehan's going to kill me on this one, and that's okay. I take Tanaka. And you know why? Every pitcher is an injury risk. We know what Tanaka can do. We saw him do it to Seattle yesterday. Even with those terrible first 2 starts, his overall numbers are great. His overall numbers were great last year. Look, Mike Wacha is a guy who's had arm problems too. Unless the guy is actually on the DL or is going to see James Andrews, they're all injury risks. So I understand fully well what the concerns are with Tanaka. I have the same exact concerns with Michael Wacha. No offense to him. No offense to the Cardinals. No offense to anybody else. But I'm going to judge this strictly on performance, and I'm taking Tanaka.
I want to see something for this next.
That's it. I'm done.
No, I want to see something for this next tweet because I just want to make sure I have it right. Okay. Rudy Gobert.
Okay.
Trade Adrian Gonzalez and Jacob DeGrom for Prince Fielder and Cole Hamels. Challenge!
Double challenge trade. Double challenge trade. All right, Gonzalez versus Fielder. Two other side of 30 sluggers, both having great years. Probably Fielder's the more surprising of two, but I think they're both. Look, we've seen Adrian Gonzalez hit 40 homers. We've seen Prince Fielder hit Filler hit 50 homers. We've seen both of these guys hit 330. That's a challenge trade, flat out. DeGrom, rookie of the year last year, unbelievable year so far this year. Cole Hamels, soft ace, maybe a legit ace. If he gets traded anywhere, it's only going to improve his situation, not make it worse, right? Mm-hmm. Who do you like? I like this for both sides. It's a matter of taste.
I think I'd go Hamels fielder.
Fine. Done. Do it.
So let's see. Hamels, let's see. He was on a run or something. And he's 5-5, but his number, it's like Cashner. Yeah. You can't really go by the win and loss record. I think that's like 6 starts in a row of 7 innings and 2 runs or less.
Yeah.
I mean, he's out of his mind.
I had him last year in a lot of leagues. Yeah. I did a similar thing with Tanaka. He started the season on the DL with bursitis. Mm-hmm. I took the buying opportunity, got him discounted in almost every league, and the guy pitched unbelievable.
Yep. All right. At Liam91 Munshie, just got offered Harper, Andrews, and Tehran for Donaldson and Garrett Richards.
Woof.
Wow, bright. Wow.
That's okay. It's a tough one.
Yeah, it's an interesting trade.
Josh Donaldson right now is your number one third baseman in fantasy baseball.
He's the bringer of rain.
Top 10 player.
Yep.
Tehran's been terrible. We think he'll bounce back. Yep. Garrett Richards has been not as good as he was last year,
mediocre,
but still very good.
Yeah.
You know,
high-end mediocre.
Presumably, Andrus is to balance. You know, I think it's a fair value deal. I really do, because as good as Harper's been, no offense, I don't think he's going to hit 45 or 50 homers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to drift back a little bit, but so will Donaldson. Richards, I think, will get a little bit better, and I think Tehran will get better.
Who's the best player in the deal?
Right now, today, it's probably Harper, but don't forget, third base is a lot harder to fill than outfield. In terms of fantasy value, mm-hmm. when you consider position scarcity, I think it could be Donaldson.
And who's the best pitcher in the deal, Tehran or Richards?
Richards.
So I think that answers your question.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's hard to say because, you know, we love Bryce Harper, and he's doing wonderful things, but I think, you know, this is... this person is making you a very nice offer.
A huge offer.
But we can make a very fair argument. You're giving up the most.
Yeah. I mean, look.
And you're giving up 2 players compared to 3. So, you know.
You know, Andrus is a fill-in player. You know,
right, but still.
You know, he never has hit for power. Yeah. He steals a little bit. He doesn't.
Also, you got to replace average. Donaldson at third base, presumably.
Right.
And nobody here does that.
Right.
So I don't think I make this trade. I think I stick with Donaldson and Richards.
Let's be fair. It's a huge offer.
It's a very legit offer.
So huge.
And listen, Tehran can go on a run, you know, but so can Garrett Richards. So I don't think I make this deal. Yeah. I say thank you. Very fair offer. Wonderful fair offer. Thank you, sir or ma'am. But I'm going
to
pass.
Oh, speaking of Donaldson.
And good day to you.
I'm not going to get into it any more than what I'm about to say. The guy pulled out of the deal that I had for him in the weekly league.
Oh, that punk. Play this for him. You're a punk. All right. At BKess.
What's he going to be? Punk.
Punk. At BKess 1207. The aforementioned Segura or Zobrist rest of season?
Zobeast with a grand slam.
The Zobeast. The Zobilla.
I like Zobrist. You know, he's not an elite player anymore. You know, he's a 10-homer, 10-steal kind of guy, but he's eligible all over the place. Might be trade bait. Might get traded to a good ballpark. Well, you never know. Segura's having a nice little year, but I'd go with Zobrist.
Okay.
I like the flexibility.
No problem with that. At Jay Littlefield, trade Posey for Grandal and Strasburg in a 2-catcher format.
You know, I love Grandal. And we've said, you know, that even now on the DL, I think Strasburg will pitch better going forward. But I'm not trading the number one catcher.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. At JB Shoes Getter.
Okay. That's an awesome one.
That's awesome.
Jeremy Brazel, the getter of his shoes.
I am the getter of shooters. Donaldson is the bringer of rain. I am the getter of shoes. Tyson Ross, Alex Wood, or Syndergaard rest of season?
Lots of stuff to like here. I'm going to go with Tyson Ross because even though he hasn't been great so far this season, I think his command will improve to the level it was last year. You know, he's missing, you know, Derek Norris by some metrics hasn't been good at framing pitches, and that's been hurting Ross a little bit. But I just think his pure stuff is so good. He's a ground ball pitcher. I like him to rebound and get better. You know, Syndergaard, as good as he's been, we've only seen, 5 starts? These guys are all good. You're not going to go wrong with any, but I'm going to go with Ross.
Okay.
Like the
I'd probably go Syndergaard, but I can't argue against Ross.
All right.
At the Real Gray West, Fielder, Adam Jones, Alcides Escobar, or Miggy Calhoun-Bogarts, which side wins?
You know, I just traded Cole Calhoun yesterday in one league. I traded him straight up to Fred Zinke and Tout Wars for Jason Hayward. Mm. I had a big, big emotional attachment to Cole Calhoun coming into this year. And he's been a disappointment. You know, the Miggy side gets the best player, but the other side gets the second best player in Fielder and the third best player in Adam Jones. Escobar versus Bogarts is pretty close because Escobar hits for a higher average and steals some bags. I'd probably go for the Miggy side because I still have faith in Calhoun. Mm-hmm. But again, fair arguments for both sides. Fair value, in my opinion.
All right. And with that, another edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411 comes to an exciting conclusion.
Good trade offers today.
Good trade off. Great trade offers. Great job by the fans, the listeners. Great job by the Goose for wrangling some tweets. Great job by you for a wonderful show sheet. Great job by everybody on the other side of the glass, as always.
Great job by you hosting. Did you know we'll be back to do this next week?
Did you know, hopefully, God willing, we'll be back to do this next week. So we will talk to you then. But until then, have a great weekend. Enjoy the podcast. May your fantasy lineups be strong. This has been the MLB.com Fantasy 411 for June 4th, 2015, year of our Lord.
AB.
One AB. Good night, everybody.